For that. Our next speaker is Ms. Janet Hamilton. Janet is an epidemiologist with public health work experience at the state and local level. She is currently the Communicable Disease Surveillance and Reporting Section Manager at the Bureau of Epidemiology in the Florida Department of Health. Please welcome Ms. Janet Hamilton.
Great. Good morning, everyone. It's great to be talking here at Finn about some of the work that we've been doing in Florida. It's always really exciting for me to come to these meetings and hear what other people are doing and then come back to Florida and take some of those good ideas and translate them into improving our own disease processes and case reporting practices. What I really wanted to talk to you about today are some of the activities that we have done within Florida to improve overall our notifiable disease and condition surveillance activities, particularly through automated case creation and then the step of case notification onto CDC. The main things that I would like to focus on are the actual benefit of using automation and logic tables stored within the surveillance application to improve the application of surveillance case definitions, and specifically then to present procedures to reduce time and effort on the side of public health that's associated with case documenting activities, while simultaneously maintaining our ability to actually detect acute cases and continue to build our infection registry. Just to step back and give you a little bit of perspective on Florida, we are a large state. We have nearly 19 million people. We have approximately 45,000 cases of notifiable diseases that are reported annually, and this is for general communicable diseases, so this excludes TBs, STDs, and HIV/AIDS. Of those 45,000 cases, the majority of them are actually chronic hepatitis B and C, so we have around 25,000 chronic B and C cases reported each year. And like many states, this is an overwhelming number. And how to handle this and handle it efficiently and effectively is something that we felt like we had a good opportunity to make a difference on. We only interview or investigate a small portion of these. So in our current practice today, when it comes to chronic hepatitis B, if you look at the combined percentage that we're interviewing or investigating, we're at about 40%. And for chronic hepatitis C, we are further down. We're only at about 20%. When you think of these 25,000 cases, then each case is associated with multiple laboratory reports, particularly when you think of chronic B and C. You often have more than one laboratory report associated with each individual case. So we look back at 2010, and so of the cases then that were reported and met the case definition and went on through the case notification process and onto CDC, we had over 50,000 laboratory reports that had actually been attached to those cases. We don't have a sense as to the entire volume that is handled because case reporting in Florida is split between those reports that we handle at the state office and those reports that are handled locally. And so at the state, we have a very good handle on the total number of reports that we receive electronically, but paper reporting actually goes directly to the local county health departments without any influence or processing at the state level. So of the cases for chronic hepatitis B and C that were reported in 2010, we had over 50,000 laboratory reports that were actually attached to the cases. I would also say that of those 50,000, that really doesn't represent the duplicate reports, because many times counties will go ahead and if they find that they have a laboratory report that's associated with a case that has already been reported and documented, they will just dismiss the lab and they won't go through the additional steps to process that and actually associate it with a case. So given this volume, we started looking at areas for streamlining. We are facing tough budget times like many states are. So our initial conversations when we talked about what we wanted to change around our case activities was maybe we're at a point where we really need to remove chronic hepatitis B and C from our list of notifiable diseases. how much longer can we sustain these activities? So we started having those discussions, and through the discussions, both at the state health office and with the locals, there were, of course, some concerns that were initially raised. For example, we've been doing it for a while. If we take it off our list of notifiable diseases, will we reach a point where we add it back on? We'd really rather have this continued continuity. And then there was also some concern that we may miss acute cases. I think particularly when you think of chronic hepatitis B and the number of follow-up instances that we do associated with identifying surface antigen positive pregnant women, we often will get those as chronic reports and then look at essentially the age demographic and follow up to determine if those women should be followed more carefully. And we find that having chronic hepatitis B reportable really helps us in that activity. But what else could we do to improve this process? So at the state health office, we offer support and guidance to the county health departments. And they raise issues to us like, I'm overwhelmed. What else can you do to help me? And of course, we are also lucky that we maintain the state surveillance system. So all counties within the state report into one notifiable disease system. Then it's actually the county health departments that complete the case investigations, and they do all the associated case data entry within our statewide system, which is called Merlin. And so Merlin is a secure web-based disease reporting and epidemiologic analysis system. It operates in all 67 counties, and it's designed by us, so we have a lot of opportunity to say, here's how it's been working. Now that we have these issues that have been raised or issues that we've identified, what else can we do to change our practices? When Merlin was initially designed, there were a few key goals that were laid out. So I think most specifically, the county health departments have always been the owners of the data. And as the owners of the data then, they have been responsible for all the data entry, any corrections associated with those cases, any updates associated with those cases, laboratory data entry, and then completing and submitting the case. And that decision was a pretty fundamental design decision, and we felt when the system started that that was very important. There was concern when Merlin was adopted back in 2000 that counties wouldn't have their same level of ownership. And so we were very conscientious that all of those management activities that the counties normally did with their paper-based systems would continue with the electronic data. And by the counties being owners of the data, they would also take a more active role and responsibility in ensuring good data quality. So at the state, as I've mentioned before, we do the system development work. And then we also have some additional roles that we consider to be system administrator roles, where we do some additional data cleaning and deduplication efforts. The system does have a lot of automated processes related to that, but there's always room for people to look at things, make sure those processes are working correctly, identify duplications that have occurred. We do the codes management, and then we manage the data transmission to CDC. So as I mentioned before, with this fundamental decision in the beginning that the state would review the data or request updates to the data but not actually change the data, it was also a decision made that the state would not actually create any cases in the system. So we may give information to the counties for them to act upon, for example, laboratory results, and laboratory results that we received electronically, but we would not actually go the next step of creating the case and moving things through that process. But as we became more resource constrained, we felt like there were additional opportunities as people became more comfortable with working with data in an electronic environment that we could shift some of those initial design systems. So while the system was not originally designed to make any decisions, the epidemiologist had originally been the person responsible for doing all the case classification according to the case definition, for reading and interpreting the laboratory results, and quite honestly, we felt like the epidemiologist to look at that information, to understand the case definitions, that was really the gold standard. And by having someone, a human, look at that information, that would be sort of the best possible practice. As we have continued to think about how we could improve things, we have started to move away from this idea that the epidemiologist is the gold standard decision maker, and we have moved into a new realm where the state is handling more and more regular processes. So, and I don't mean state staff, I mean the state through automated processes. So we are now doing automated data entry and determining the actual case classification. So in the old way, you can see over here that the epidemiologist would essentially know what the case definition was for the individual disease that they were working on, and they would actually make the selection as to whether it was confirmed, probable, suspect, or unknown. And over the past couple of years, then, we have been adding logic tables to actually store the case definition components and then have the system itself classify the case. So the first few things that we did was actually present the case definition to the user. So when the user was actually interacting with classifying the case, we were displaying the information to them, so that they didn't necessarily have to keep their paper case definition book. They could simply look within the system. And we started breaking apart those case definition components to add some decision support. So really what we did was update the system to have these case classification algorithms. So we took the individual case definition components and we really deconstructed them into multiple yes-no statements. So with the individual case definitions, there's clinical, laboratory, and epidemiologic criteria. And so we took those individual components and we essentially made records within the system and within our logic tables to say, if this component is met, this is component number, in this case we're looking at Giardia, that we have added into the system, 2,851, and if you take this component plus this other component of the case definition, so it's clinically compatible and it has this specific laboratory criteria, then the system itself will store those answer sets and be able to determine the overall case classification. When we started this process, the new CSTE position statement formats hadn't actually been released. And once those came out, it really helped us move through the process of splitting out those individual components, because we no longer had to first have an epidemiologist look at the information. We could really give the system developers and those people working on the IT side the case classification tables, and a lot of this work was already done for us. So after we had the logic statements in place, then we moved into our next realm of activities, which is what we actually called smart case definitions, where instead of the system evaluating whether a person had selected a different criteria, so selected on the case definition screen that the person was clinically compatible and make that selection, the system will also store individual components, more like a medical record. So it would actually store whether or not someone had diarrhea or abdominal pain, or it stores individual pieces of information about those laboratory results. So the system stores this test type, it stores the specimen information, it stores the results. And so we moved on to the next step where the user could, what we considered, change the facts. So the fact of whether someone had a particular symptom or not. But once those facts were entered, the system aggregated the facts and made the determination about whether or not this should be a confirmed or probable case or a suspect case, etc. So the user could change the facts, but they could no longer make any decisions for overriding the case classification. Unless, of course, they change the facts. So you could actually delete out the fact that the person had any reported symptoms, or you could, you know, perhaps create a fake laboratory result. But it was all very fact-based. And I think when you think of most of the people that are working with our surveillance application are public health nurses. And so they're very focused on the facts associated with the case. And they're good at doing data entry when it comes to those pieces of factual information. So this is a little bit of what the screen actually looks like. So a user would have, in another location within the system, actually entered the fact that the person, for example, for Giardia, had abdominal pain, diarrhea, and nausea. And so the system then would have this stored, and by knowing that these symptoms had been entered, it would essentially say, yes, this meets the piece of the case definition that says this case is clinically compatible, and essentially select that criteria component. And then on the laboratory results, this laboratory result was also entered. And so essentially this particular lab for Giardia was associated with a stool specimen. This is the test type, and the result was positive. And so the system then is reading this information off the laboratory result and saying this piece of the case definition component has been met by the fact that this information had actually been entered by the user. So at this point now, the system is actually reading and understanding the laboratory data. And specifically, I think as we have advanced electronic laboratory reporting in the state, the data that we're getting associated with those electronic laboratory reports has been a lot more machine readable. We get a LOINC code, we know exactly what disease code it's for, we follow up when we bring new facilities on to make sure that we're getting the specimen information, that the specimen information is coded, and that we also have very specific information about the actual test type, with the idea that the system will then be able to read that information and make a determination about the case definition. So there's a system administrator role where those case definitions are actually stored within the system, and we decided that we would make this data driven. So someone like me can go into the system and essentially select edit, and I can add the case definition in and the various criteria components associated with those pieces of information. And the other thing that's nice is you can go ahead and set when you want that case definition to be effective, so that once there are changes to the position statements at the annual meeting, we can go ahead and be working on what changes will be in place starting January 2011. So this is not that easily digested in a PowerPoint presentation, but essentially this box that's kind of in the back here is where I would put in, for example, the pieces of the symptom information from the codes table that I would want to be included in the case definition. And so if one of these symptoms would exist, then this checkbox would be checked. And the same thing would be true when I entered in that these were the appropriate laboratory results that could be associated, as well as here's where I have included some additional test type information as well as specimen type information. And so these are the codes that are associated with this underlying laboratory result display. And so now that this information has been associated with the individual case, the system then knows that this piece of the case definition component has been met, and so it can go ahead and essentially look at the system stored answer sets and say, yep, that should be a confirmed case. This is just another screenshot of what it looks like for someone like me. After I typed in these pieces of information, then I could come up here and say, okay, I want to have a new confirmed piece of the case definition, and so I'm going to take these different components, this one, number 2298, and I'm just going to add those in and say that if these essentially components are met, then that should meet the confirmed case definition. So this is how the user interacts with this screen. This looks at the underlying table structure then. What we have done is that we actually have the effective date that's associated with the individual case definition. We have another table that actually stores the order for which we want those statements to be displayed. We separately store in a table the actual text that the user sees on the screen, and then there's a third table that actually has those outcome components. So this piece plus this piece would equal confirmed. So these iterative system enhancements then have led us to think about how we can be smarter with our electronic laboratory reporting data and how we can continue to remove the user from having to read and interpret some of these pieces of information. So as I said before, we were previously feeling like the epidemiologist themselves was the gold standard for classifying cases. And what we found, for example, if you take a very easy case definition, like in Florida, the Campylobacter case definition changed this year. And so we added essentially to that case definition in January the fact that a new laboratory test, essentially antigen check detection, was now going to be part of the case definition. The old case definition only included culture results. We did a training. We distributed written materials about this, and we found that even with those pieces of information, that 11% of the cases were classified incorrectly. So even though we had given the epidemiologist what we felt like was a lot of information about what the change to the case definition was, how to read and interpret the new laboratory reports, we did, you know, web-based trainings on this, and then we actually gave them the written materials. When we let the epidemiologist classify the cases, we still found a pretty high percentage of the cases that were not being classified correctly. And that was with what we consider to be one of the easiest case definition changes that we will ever run into. So with that information, we have continued to move towards more and more automation of these case definition algorithms. So we are currently in a process in Florida where some of them are completely automated, some of them are partially automated, and we've been able to do an actual evaluation as to what the percentage of errors are associated with it so that we can continue to move forward with this idea of additional automation. So then the next step that we took specifically with chronic hepatitis B and C and the issue of constrained resources was, how can we remove the user from handling these at all? If we're considering removing this from the list of reportable diseases, is there something that we could do where perhaps we can still document these cases, but we don't have to have time and energy spent on the county health department side working with the information? The chronic hepatitis B and C case definition is also a lot more complex than other case definitions. And for certain pieces of it, you know, you can be waiting for laboratory results that are 6 months apart. And many times we find that the counties will not necessarily handle that information in the way that we would want it to be handled. So after the logic tables had been created and looking at our electronic laboratory reporting results, the system could now evaluate the test type and test code. We started thinking, well, what else can it do? If we know that the system has associated these laboratory results together and that the case definition can be easily met based off of the laboratory results information, why can't the system automatically then, instead of just showing the user the lab that needs to be acted upon, go ahead and create the case, evaluate it against the case definition, and submit it, and then if new laboratory results are received electronically, it'll just go through the process again, and the user doesn't have to touch it at all. So here's then is that process flow of data receipt. So external to the health department, then we receive these electronic labs from the state lab, large reference labs, and hospital-based laboratories. They're processed into a central ELR database. The surveillance application Merlin then has filters that sit on the application side and only consume those laboratory results of interest to general communicable diseases. And this is the part then where, since we already had this filtering process in place, we could continue to build logic within that to create cases within the system. And then this last piece then was where the county health departments, under the old process for chronic hepatitis B and C, would essentially be presented with their working list. Here are all your new laboratory results that have been received in the last day, or if you haven't acted upon them, that are waiting for you to act upon. So this is then where we really felt like we had an opportunity to improve the county health department processes. So these were the next steps, which all included county health department time. So from within the surveillance application, then they're reviewing their CHD task list, their jurisdiction's task list, They are essentially reading and interpreting those laboratory results and determining which ones they want to go ahead and act upon. Once they read and interpret the laboratory result, the user was then determining whether or not this was associated with a new person in the system, and if so, they would add a new profile or decide to attach it to an existing profile. And of course, the system does help do automated searches to help people evaluate whether or not this is a new person. And then from there, once it's a new person, did this person already have a case for this particular disease created, or is this associated with new morbidity? So then the user is actually saying, is this a new case? And doing a few steps to actually create the case and attach it to an existing case, and then finally submitting the case to the state office. And depending on the individual user, the individual county health department, and the disease, they don't necessarily continue down this route from start to finish each time. So they may decide, yes, it's an individual person, but I'm going to spend additional time and energy perhaps looking at the individual case and determining whether it's a new case, or perhaps I'm interrupted and so now I'm saving the case and I'm coming back to it later, and then I have to remind myself of where I was. So there were individual loops depending on the disease investigator where people were really looking at this information multiple times simply because their own internal processes had various interruptions and other activities during the day. So here is our new process. So we took that previous process and we thought, why can't we automate all of this? Why do we need the counties to be spending time on that? So based on the actual test code for chronic hepatitis B and C, then we have the system automatically identifying them. Those tests never sit on the county's task list. They essentially get imported directly into the system. The system has logic built in to determine if there's an existing person. If there is an existing person, it will go ahead and attach it to that person's information. And if not, it will take the information off the ELR and essentially create a new person within the system. Then the system goes into the next step of looking for existing cases. Associated with this person, do we already have a chronic hepatitis B or C case that has been reported? And if so, it will either create a new case if there is no case, or it will attach it to an existing case, and then at the end it essentially evaluates that against the case definition and marks the case as closed and completed. And it will continue to do this for every new laboratory result that is received by the system. Before we actually made the change, we did decide that we wanted to collect some pre- and post-implementation data. We are spending a pretty large portion of the public health preparedness funds that come into the Bureau of Epidemiology to do surveillance system development work. And like many of you, we're finding that the money that we have been using for some of our system development activities is shrinking, and we are getting an increasing number of questions like, why do you need to spend money on this? How is this actually helping save time and resources? Maybe we need to, instead of spending money on developing your surveillance applications, maybe we just need to pay for more epidemiologists to actually be working in the field. So with the pre- and post-implementation data, we recruited 10 pilot counties to serve in two different pilot periods. So we took the first five that were willing to be the very first set of guinea pigs, and essentially they received a questionnaire that went through before we actually said, okay, we're going to be ready for you to go into this automated process, to document the amount of time that they spent on that individual week handling their electronic labs associated with chronic hepatitis B and C, and we quantified those pieces that were associated with system-related work where in automation we could alleviate that time for them, separate from instances where, for example, they need to call the hospital to find out additional pieces of information. So after we aggregated the information from those 10 pilot counties in the pre-data collection period, We then set up this automation process where we could have some counties that were going through the automated process while other counties continued along the old path of handling their ELR results. When we finished the pilot and compared the pre- and post-implementation information, we found that we were saving an average of 30 minutes per case associated with processing, data entry, and interpreting the laboratory results. And because chronic hepatitis B and C is such high volume for us, that's going to translate into an estimated savings of about 6.3 FTEs annually. So that automated process now is alleviating that work effort. The other thing that we looked at was the average time from when the cases were actually entered into the system to when they were actually submitted and transferred to CDC. And so by looking at that, we went from an average in these pilot counties of 14 days, and that was reduced to 6.5 days. So we saw a big change on the timeliness aspect as well. And separately, we did not lose the ability then to identify acute cases. So what did we do for the county health departments? We created a new feature in the system where they could look and see everything that essentially Merlin has done for them on their behalf. So there's a new feature that focuses specifically on the chronic hepatitis B and C cases. And users have a lot of flexibility. They can look at everything that was created within the last day, all new laboratory reports that were processed by the system. They can look at individual providers that submitted information. And we also set up what we felt like were a few filters. So some epidemiologists are more curious than others, but we wanted to be sure that no matter what, there were more high-priority things that we wanted to ensure the counties to look at. So we wanted them to be sure that they were looking at all new cases that were created in women of childbearing age. So we went ahead and created a report that has a filter associated with that. So specifically, they could identify more easily those cases who were perhaps associated with surface antigen-positive pregnant women. We also wanted to encourage the counties to be focused on chronic hepatitis B and C in young adults. And so if they do have time to follow up and investigate cases, this is where we are helping to prioritize their work for them. And then, of course, they can see any instances where the system was not actually able to resolve the case classification at this point. So in conclusion then, the implementation has really reduced the misclassification errors according to the case definition. And this has now been applied across multiple diseases, and we've seen improvements there. It certainly improves our notification time onto CDC and onto the state health office. Electronic laboratory reporting for us has improved a lot of things, but it's really provided a platform for time-saving innovations because we were already getting the data electronically. What else could we do within the state to improve reporting practices? The logic tables for the case definition evaluation are transferable. They could be reused by multiple applications. And the other thing that we've really seen is the change in resource allocation. So previously, I supervised 4 data entry staff at the state health office and data entry staff in individual county health departments. Well, now we don't need that level of individual, but we still need some resources to maintain our system development. So I think actually doing the pre- and post-implementation data collection for us has been very beneficial for us to go to, for example, the director of the Division of Disease Control and make sure that they continue to advocate for our funding dollars. And this slide is some feel-good information from the county health departments. Anytime you make system changes and you change regular processes and practices, we have 1,000 users, and some people are more readily adopters of information technology changes. So for us, it was really helpful to capture what people thought about the system. And it's actually been, we asked for this information on the surveys. Some of this less quantified information has made more of a difference to leadership and management because they know some of these individual workers. And so for them to say, this made a difference to this individual person, it has really helped personalize these system development activities. So the first comment, I just wanted to say thank you for all the work that your folks undertook in setting up the automated lab processing function for chronic hepatitis cases in Merlin. It has been 10 days or so since the feature was made available in our county, and the time that I now spend in processing these cases has decreased even more than I had initially anticipated. This allows me to concentrate on other matters of greater priority during my workday. So far, I have not experienced any glitches in the system either. Also, we are still manually entering the hard copy reports that we receive from local providers. I expect that as more labs come online with electronic laboratory reporting, even these will be processed automatically in the foreseeable future. If everything continues along its present course, I anticipate this automation will save us both time and money. Another user commented that they had less time sifting through the Hep B labs for women of childbearing age. And then this one is perhaps more like most users, the ELR task list was out of control. Now it's manageable and I'm able to work on reporting the cases. So the counties were actually very appreciative in the end of the work that we did. This work does not get done by one individual person. We have a great team of folks that work on activities related to Merlin, activities about thinking through how we can actually make improvements at the individual county level, and so I'd certainly like to thank these individuals for all their contributions. I'd be happy to take any questions.
All right. Thank you, Janet. I don't know what you guys got out of that presentation, but clearly Janet and the state of Florida are developing this Skynet of public health reporting systems. It's very impressive. So we're going to take some questions now. I'll ask the speakers to, Janet, you can stay up there if you want, if you guys will just share that microphone. I'll do my best Phil Donahue impersonation here and pass this microphone around. I think you were first.
Can I actually slide one over, Janet?
I actually forgot what my question was. but I think it was, my question was related to, like, what the NBS would do if a case report was transferred from one NBS state to another after it was notified to CDC. So I'm worried about, like, the duplication of cases, two states reporting the same case. I would hope that, I don't know whether this would be within the, I mean, hopefully it would be within the NBS workflow that if a case was notified to CDC that was later transferred to another state, we would get a delete message. That the state who originally received the case report and then transferred it to another state would send us a deletion of that case notification that we don't have duplicate cases.
Sure, and that workflow is there, actually. I forgot to mention, but yeah, once you transfer a public health case report to another jurisdiction, it gets, it's logically deleted from the jurisdiction A, and that is notified to CDC before a second state actually sends a notification to CDC. So that workflow is there.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Can you make sure that mic's on up there?
Hi, this question's for Janet. Actually, it's two questions. So
sure.
Take those. The first one is, I work with a lot of infection control practitioners in the hospitals who are responsible for a lot of case reports to the health departments. So did you eliminate the reporting of, or do they even have to report chronic hepatitis to you right now?
So our current state regulations require both laboratory and physician hospital reporting. Based off of the work that we have done here, we anticipate actually removing chronic hepatitis B and C from the physician hospital-based reporting and keeping it only as a laboratory report. But our state regulations need to be modified in order for that to happen, and it's a lengthy process.
Okay. And then the second part, not related at all, is so once you send a case to the CDC, what happens if additional lab now come in for that? As you know, people continue to draw labs.
Sure. So once the case has been notified to CDC, if we get additional laboratory information, that would be attached to the case. And if it changed the case classification of confirmed, probable, or suspect, that would simply be sent as an update. For chronic hepatitis B and C now in Florida, we're still sending the old NETS file. So that actual detail off of the laboratory result does not go in our file, but it certainly would impact the case classification.
Thank you.
Yeah, good question. And if people could just identify what states they're with, that would be great, I think, for the audience as well.
Hi, I'm Tanya Omey from Atlas Development. And the question I had was regarding the NBS transfer of cases. That was a demonstration from one jurisdiction to another, both of them using the NEDS base system. Do we know, anybody, whether there has been any successful transfer of public health case reports between two jurisdictions that aren't using the same system, using messaging or something like that?
Not that I'm aware of at this point, in terms of transferring electronic public health case report between two jurisdictions. I know that jurisdictions are interested in being able to do that. I think when it goes back to the idea of, you know, in the case, I know that we're working this out in helping Texas, but the idea that a standard does not exist, and I think that's one of the things that we need to continue to work on, is to identify and promulgate that standard to be able to send a case report between two jurisdictions. But going back to the point that I was making, I think one of the most important parts, though, is making sure that we have the content and, you know, the terminology, that we're using the right standards, you know, that represents the same data element, such as name, you know, so the systems can talk to each other. But how we wrap that up into a specific structure, that's something that we need to get to going forward.
And I know that this question wasn't directed at me, but we're looking for any state that's interested in doing that. We have a release coming out this fall where we're actually going to be batching, and essentially we will have done all the pieces on our end to have those cases sort of prepared and ready. So if there is another state that's interested on that activity, please come and see me afterwards. I will say also that has been done for electronic labs. I know that we partnered with New York, for example, to filter out all those laboratory results that were associated with New York residents that we were receiving, and actually send those on to New York prior to them ever entering the system. But we certainly get a number of cases, particularly in Florida, for out-of-state residents.
All right, there's a question right over here. Great, two questions. Janet, while I'm doing this, can you move the mouse to the top of the screen and let's see if we have any live meeting questions?
Oh, yes.
No, none up there. Okay.
I'm Sandy Rausch. I am in the immunization program at CDC, but I actually have a question for Janet. In the context of a million years ago, having been one of the 67 counties in Florida, that's amazing. Congratulations. I wish it had been, you know, way back in the paper days. But I have a specific question, and it goes to the logic of what I'll call rescuing an acute bee in particular from the chronic bees that go through, because it initially, within the case definition, if it's only known to the machine and known to the human, the first surface antigen, you know, or surface antibody, then you really don't know. Does that go to the let's wait and see queue? Or how do you rescue those potential acutes from the chronic work?
Right. So if there's not, so it's just the initial result,
right,
those will go into a holding queue until the second one is received.
Or the county can take it out. And
the county can take it out at any point in time, but the county would have to actually run the list to determine which ones of those there are. When we surveyed the counties, how are you identifying your acute cases? I mean, for example, we looked at the data that we have right now and, you know, take one of the largest counties in the state, Miami-Dade, where we have over 3 million people, and we found that an acute case actually hadn't been reported from that jurisdiction for several years. So while we don't believe that acute cases are not occurring, the ability in our current environment of counties actively identifying those was not something that's necessarily occurring in the same systematic process statewide. So we felt that the automation process wasn't going to lose anything from where we were. And when we surveyed the counties to ask them, how are you currently identifying your acute cases? The overwhelming majority said, we look at the provider that sends us the information, and if we have time to follow up, those are how we sort them. So when I mentioned that we had created a report or a list of cases created, we display in sort of a lineless view the fact that the case was created, and then we have displayed the provider information very prominently so that if a county wants to go back, it's now a sortable list where they can identify common providers, or they know that acute cases are always coming from certain providers. But I think we haven't lost anything from where we started. Are we not identifying acute cases every day during paper reporting practices and a lot more sort of time and energy involved in handling those cases? Absolutely. Nor have we ever gotten to a point where we're no longer reporting the same volume of chronic cases. I mean, when you think of chronic BNC, you would think at a certain point we would start to have lower and lower numbers reported, because at a certain point we would have identified them all. But we've been pretty consistent around the 25,000 cases.
Hey, Janet, it's Scott from Massachusetts. Question for you. The screen that you showed, the algorithm of the cases coming in, identifying, and then attaching the labs, what is your algorithm? I mean, is it a weighted algorithm? And second question to that is, we in Massachusetts use optical character recognition, clinician-based reporting for hepatitis B, C's, and Lyme's, but it's created a large amount of deduplication events and cases where you have to go in and manually look and based on our weighting algorithm. So in your algorithm, how are you identifying those? And is that labor intensive with somebody reviewing all those cases that possibly are new cases or existing cases? Does that make sense?
Is this where you're
go back one to? More. I think it was the, keep going. The loop process where the case comes in identifying it and you're saying it just attaches. We have like 7,000 events setting in our what we call a workflow for the Maven product, and you have to identify those and go through them, our staff, and it's sometimes it's a little bit daunting to our staff.
Yeah. So I guess for this approach, first of all, it was with chronic hepatitis B and C, which we felt like we weren't necessarily handling those as we would handle, say, a meningococcal case or something like that. So we already weren't functioning where we have 100% resources dedicated to this activity. So previous to this, I should say that we did issue guidance to the counties that said, if you get laboratory results coming in, you should work your chronic B and C case based off of that information. And we're not expecting, outside of course, looking for the fact that it's a surface antigen positive woman or perhaps it's a chronic case in a young person, we're not expecting you to do a lot of additional work. Report it based off of the information that you receive, which is really different than what we do for a lot of the other communicable diseases. So in terms of this evaluation process, the case definitions do have a priority that we set at the beginning. So the individual pieces of the algorithm, so this component plus this component has this priority. So if it meets an individual component level, depending on which of those components that it meets, it kind of bumps up in priority. The other thing that's true is once it is confirmed, we really don't have a lot of instances where we actually find, or thus far, where it's gone from, say, confirmed to probable. We're not having a lot of instances where we've sort of met the confirmed case classification and then we're having to move down in classifications. And then we have a whole bin that essentially sit out there as those that are unresolved at this point. This has been in operation for about 3 months now, so we're kind of starting to sort through what those unresolved issues may be. And I anticipate that we will certainly have some cleanup work at the state level, but I think we will. Our decision has been that we're going to try and automate this as much as possible, because in this particular instance with chronic BNC, we're not at 100% right now. So the decisions that we're making in an automated environment are not, they're not producing poorer quality data or information. Do we think, you know, for example, I mean, this is an automated process of identifying a person, so we have our best match logic that we've put in place. Do we think that perhaps we have made a few mistakes there? Sure. Are users making mistakes there today? Absolutely. So we did err on the side of caution that we would tend to create more new cases than try and attach things to people that we thought weren't the correct people, because we thought that that would be a lot easier for us to identify at the state. I mean, for example, it's a lot easier for us to say, we're seeing a lot more reported morbidity, what's the problem that we may be occurring there?
But so, a quick question, but yeah. If somebody identifies, you know, Joe Schmo, and they see new Joe Schmo, and they know that that's it's the same person, two separate events or cases,
mm-hmm.
Can they call somebody at the state and y'all can merge the two?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And we have someone that's regularly looking at that. We do that once a week. Yeah.
Question? Oh, you were good? Okay. Anything else?
Hi, Janet. I'm Yvette with CDC. And I just want to tag on to the question that this gentleman just asked,
mm-hmm.
because we have two similar systems at the National Center of Birth Defects that does this similar processing. So in the process of identifying which records are the same, are you using some type of probabilistic or deterministic algorithm?
Yes.
Okay. And so when those cases, so you stated when those cases are identified, is that a tool that you all developed, or is it something that you're utilizing commercially?
No, it's a tool that we developed.
Okay.
It's logic that we put in place. And a decision will be made on each of those, and then we're sort of going to be in the next steps of evaluating how good that was. We did reach out to our vital statistics folks because we felt like they probably had some of the best advice around deduplication pieces when we started working on that logic, and we really interacted with them to develop it. And I'd be more than happy to share that with people if anyone was interested in it, or to receive feedback on how we can improve it.
Okay. And just one final question. So the elements that you utilized in a deduplication, is it like name, social security number, personally identifiable information? Are you able to utilize personally identifiable information?
Sure. So we looked at the information that's coming in off of the electronic laboratory report, which is how this whole process gets started in the beginning. So on our ELRs, we always get name and we consistently get date of birth. I mean, we're missing date of birth, you know, less than 1% of the time, and we actually can't process it without a date of birth. So those will automatically come to our attention. So we have sort of a tiered approach. So if we get an exact match of a name, an exact match of the date of birth, an exact match of the social security number, then those are sort of done. Then we have sort of the next tier, which are like matching, and then we have, you know, maybe the name doesn't exactly match, but the date of birth matches, then which pieces of the name are incorrect? Is it missing, for example, the middle initial? And so we have a tiered approach as to how we've worked through that.
Thank you. I just had Sherry Davidson from Alabama. I had a question about the case definitions y'all were using for the hepatitides.
So we're using what's in the system now are those that are the national case definitions. So not the ones that were just agreed upon at CSTE in 2011, but the ones that are currently active for this current reporting year. We will be updating them because those position statements were updated.
Okay, any other questions? We'll do one last check on the live meeting just to make sure we don't. Okay, we're good. Okay, well, I'd like to thank our panelists, John and Singh and Janet, for their presentations and their work. And also, I'd like to thank you all for your interesting questions and comments. I would encourage you to head down to the exhibit hall. Also, go online and fill out evaluation forms for this session and enjoy the rest of the conference. Thank you.